Well, good afternoon. It's a gorgeous afternoon on the Isle of Man. And good news, no further confirmed positive tests for coronavirus. The total number of confirmed cases, 336. That's 4,703 concluded tests, 29 people waiting for a result, 5 people waiting for a test, 3 of whom are part of the extended testing regime. There are 3 active cases in the community and nobody in hospital with coronavirus. That's the good news.
I will personally miss him in the Council of Ministers, but once he'd voted against the Council of Ministers publicly, having been advised that he didn't have a clear position, we'd had it checked into and I'd written to him or had the Chief Secretary write to him to advise he didn't have a position, he still went ahead and voted against the Council of Ministers.
That was the words of the Chief Minister this morning, Howard Quayle. And Chris Thomas, the man who was sacked, is with us today. Good afternoon, Mr. Thomas.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wint, or Andy, if I may be so bold.
Jolly good. Chris Thomas, did you see this coming at all?
I'm very surprised. I'm very disappointed. I clearly do have a long-held, principled, declared position in respect of black planning. Back in my manifesto in 2016 general election, I have a whole page entitled Rebalancing Planning. One sentence says, the next government can make what I called the Chief Minister's hissy fit about a particular planning decision in May 2015, the turning point for planning and development. If so, I think my 2-year campaign for rebalancing planning will be validated. I then went on about new planning principles have been agreed, and that was by a committee in part that I chaired. Decisions should be transparent, fair and depoliticised. And so on. So there's a whole page, Andy. Any constituent in Douglas Central, anybody who wants to see my commitment, sees that I've always had this position. It's principled, and it's quite clear I've got that position.
And that presumably would be the mitigating factor which you would state, because obviously decisions in there has to be sort of collaborative ministerial responsibility. However, if there is a moral conflict on this, or a manifesto conflict, then that will you can get out of voting with the ministers, and that's your contention then?
Well, it's not moral. It's this item is not in the programme for government. It's not in the budget, and the issue then becomes about whether it's national importance issue. But the most important thing is that the collective responsibility changed in October 2016. I haven't heard the Chief Minister mention that once. I've mentioned it often in Council of Ministers, and I haven't heard the Chief Secretary respond. But essentially, collective responsibility was changed to allow Alf Cannon and Kate Beecroft to come into the Council of Ministers. And essentially, we have a Council of Ministers majority vote on adding things into the collective responsibility realm, which are of national importance. And we didn't have that vote.
Okay.
And, this item.
Now, you're extremely familiar with this. Most people aren't. So in words of one syllable, where does the conflict in this planning, subject, where does it arise in your mind?
It's about the right to a fair process, a human right to a fair process in planning. It's making sure that we don't store up problems in the future for planning decisions, because you've got to remember, once something's built, it's built forever. It won't just be here for the coronavirus period. And essentially, the order that was before Tim Ward on Tuesday would have stored problems, as people like Jane Paul Wilson, a qualified lawyer, laid down very clearly to the Honourable Court. And she was obviously persuasive. Her arguments were very good, because government didn't call the Attorney General to contradict anything she said. And pretty much everybody in Tim Ward voted against this order, who wasn't bound by collective responsibility. So that's pretty damning indictment of what was brought forward. I knew that. And therefore, I believe my vote was correct and will always be correct. I do think it's disappointing and surprising that I've been sacked by the Chief Minister in that context. And I do think it will disrupt the development of public policy in the Isle of Man. But I hope in the next couple of days we can move on from that. And basically, I'll make sure that those public policy directions I would have been associated with in government can continue with my new role as a backbencher.
And what about the Chief Minister's contention that you lobbied members of LegCo?
It's the government code talks about crusading for a particular point of view. Of course, when a member of Tim Ward asks me for information, and I told the Chief Minister that five members clearly asked me for information, which I helped them understand, members, the first they knew about this particular order was when it appeared on the Tim Ward order paper just before the long weekend. One member sent me an email with a question about exemptions for planning inspectors, which I forwarded to the officers, and I then forwarded the response from the officers, and there were a few other queries that came up from perhaps the sixth of the members of Tim Ward, and I dealt with those. And I've got to be honest, Tim Ward shines in glory over this decision, because over a bank holiday, members got into the heart of some difficult issues in law, some difficult issues in the use of digital technology, and they voted accordingly.
And now, you sound shaken by this decision, Chris.
No, I'm just disappointed. There are some very important things that are going on in Manx public policy, and it's a crucial moment in any government's life. The fourth year of a government's history is when you achieve most in general terms. So immediately I was dismissed. We had to then, well, government will have had to think about how they take through the cost sharing regime for public sector pensions, which is something I've been working on for 3.5 years. And there's a project that's been in train for 10 years. We had to cancel in the Industrial Relations Forum meeting this lunchtime, which is a very important part of human resource activity. I had a phone conversation with Manx Gas and its shareholders lined up for just after the Chief Minister called me into his office. And this will affect, gas negotiations, because that's something that I've been involved personally with for the Council of Ministers. Basically, it's profoundly disappointing from my point of view. This is a very important issue on which I've had a 7-year pre-declared position, a principal position. It's not an issue of national importance and emergency in the sense that a decision needs to be rushed. Exactly as the Tim Ward members who spoke said, this needed more consideration. Planning permission is forever. It's not like how many people can go through a gathering or who can come across our border. It's forever, and we needed to use a period of reflection.
Are you concerned about the conflation of legislation during the pandemic, during the emergency powers?
Exactly. This planning change was already could have been done by regular legislation in emergency powers. It's completely inappropriate to do this. There isn't the backlog impact, and if the backlog was to have been managed using this order that was put before Tim Ward, it potentially would have been made worse, because the legal risk would have increased, according to the honourable members who voted against it and threw it out comprehensively in Tim Ward.
Why didn't you vote during that the border vote earlier on?
This was the first time entry restrictions had been imposed legally. Already before members, there was an order to amend the one that was being approved. There were notable omissions about how to deal with quarantine, how to deal with exemptions. All of those things were not covered in that regulation. They needed tidying up, and several other ministers had reservations, and many Timwell members expressed reservations in the debate. I've even been moving amendments to these entry restrictions for government in recent weeks. Essentially, the first order put down there was rushed. It was inappropriate, stored up lots of problems which have had to be solved since. And that was the reason that I chose not to vote positively for it, although I didn't vote against it. And the border policy is absolutely crucial. The Chief Minister summed it up recently. In the recent days, he's been now catching up with where we were at the end of March. Essentially, it's not a binary decision, having a closed border or an open border. There's lots of gradations in between, and that first order was clearly not appropriate to handle those gradations. And you know, I express my sympathy and anger in a way, and give my apologies to all the people who've been adversely affected by the border policy as it's been applied.
Chris Thomas, MHK, is with us on the Man in Line today. And if you want to pass comment, you can text, you can email, or you can give us a call on 66 13 68. And it was Dave who prompted that question, Chris. Why did Mr. Thomas abstain from the closed border vote? Well, he didn't abstain, you just weren't there. Does he agree now that it was the wrong decision to not vote? Were you wrong not to vote?
Well, no, as I explained, I've taken the two of the amendments for the entry controls through Tim Wood on behalf of government in the last couple of weeks, and I would have been taking more, I believe. And essentially, it was just that regulation wasn't perfect. It was good. We needed to close the borders, but we needed to close it taking into account all the differences that were being closed, and we hadn't at that point, as proved by the fact that there was an amending regulation before members, even when they were being asked to approve that first that first regulation. We could have done it in a better way.
Now, your portfolio spread right across ministries, right across the Isle of Man government. Before you, of course, it was Mr. Robert Shaw, who admitted to being very frustrated by the role. Were you happy with your performance in the role?
3.5 years I've done the role. It's a very difficult job. I have taken a huge range of things. I chair Council of Ministers subcommittee covering social policy, covering legislation, covering environment and infrastructure. I've taken through 4 bills each year, each of the years of the administration. It is an incredibly difficult job. It still needs thinking through. I was doing it for nearly 4 times the length of time, Mr. Robert Shaw, but what his experience taught me something, and hopefully my experience will be helpful for the next person who assumes the role, whoever that is.
What's the most pressing thing that the next Minister of Policy and Resources, I beg your pardon, who had your portfolio, what's the next, the most pressing subject they'll have to deal with?
Well, legislation programme, I just restarted it on behalf of government and we laid out a programme. That's one of the responsibilities. The Minister for Portfolio and Policy and Reform becomes the chair of the Public Services Commission. That was what was established yesterday automatically by Tin Ward Convention. So there's some pressing issues to do with public sector pensions reform and a few other HR issues. We've got planning. We've got the area plan for the East, which was supposed to be before Tin Ward in the next couple of months. We've also got the regeneration of brownfield sites around Douglas, which has always been important to me. We've got homelessness and housing and social policy issues, which is something I've been working on behind the scenes for the last 2 months. Residential and nursing care. The Abbotswood situation has really focused on the need for us to review how we integrate care, and especially for older people, inside the overall healthcare framework. One of the projects Chris Robert Shaw started was what he called single legal entity, and him and I and a few others have worked on a committee which has ended up producing a report for Council of Ministers called One Public Service, and the Minister for Policy and Reform will have to take that on running. There's a thing called the Smart Service Framework to make better use of government resources to deliver better public service at a cheaper price for the general public, and so on and so on. Equality Act implementation. When I was last talking with you, Andy, I made a pledge to look at mobility scooters and buses, and there is a major issue that needs addressing to do with that. Local authorities, rates reform. But most importantly of all in this, Andy, is that we are coming out of the coronavirus emergency, and we will have to now adjust social and economic policy that we deliver in the light of what the fact that that has concentrated and augmented the challenges we were already facing in delivering public service.
What's your view of Comyn's performance during the pandemic?
I'm disappointed with some of the ways that the governance around it has been handled. Some of the legal aspects have concerned me all along, and there are policy issues that we now need to pick up in several areas. Now is not the time. I'm a constituency MHK for Douglas Central, and in that capacity, I need to secure the best for everybody in the island, and that's what I'll be working on, making sure that the budget in July and the other responses that come out of coronavirus are the right ones for all of us in the island.
Do you think that Comyn, the government, is heading in the right direction as we come out of the pandemic? And obviously, a recession could loom. And as you say, there are social issues that we simply can't avoid now.
I'm absolutely sure that the government is in a difficult time has done many, many things very well. I'm sure that there will be issues that arise from the things that they were going. But what's actually happened in the last 2 years, Andy, is that Tim Wood has asserted itself. There are many excellent Timberwolves members who have got strong views which are different from governments. And now I think it's from the backbenches, it'll be an opportunity for me and the other members of Timberwolves to make sure that we really do have the right policies for the right moment in the new world. Because we already had pent-up challenges in the past, Andy, and that they've, as I said before, they've been augmented and made more, even more challenging than they were previously by the amount of money we've spent and the amount of dislocation to people's lives and livelihoods that's been caused by the crisis.
Okay, I want to go to Stephen now, who's with us today. Let's see. Good afternoon, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Mr. Thomas. And good afternoon, listeners. I must declare right away that I am a constituent of Mr. Thomas, and I wholeheartedly support his position of what the stance he's taken. He will know that, as an example, I was very, very involved in the Finch Hill Bowling Club area, the park, the bowlings, the tennis courts, the tennis, the snooker pavilion, when there was a planning matter over that of getting the designations right. And what I would like to do is echo, really, to what Mr. Thomas is saying and Mrs. Poole Wilson, which was that without that ability to speak in person, the planning inspector can't see the passion that you have over these matters. And just simply sending a letter in about a planning matter is definitely not adequate. As Mr. Thomas has said, it would be there forever. So that's just the first point I'd like to say that is a very important matter. And the second one is, I'd like to ask Mr. Thomas, does he think, and I know it wasn't Comyn's fault that there has been a pandemic around the world, but Comyn did introduce the measures that they did do. Does he think that it's vitally important that we examine what was decided in all aspects, warts and all, to see if it ever happened again, or indeed if there was a flare-up in a year or two's time, how we can stop the negative side of it and just get the positives right? Does Mr. Thomas think that is possibly the best way out of the issue?
Andy, do you want me to reply, Andy? Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
I completely agree that we need to review. I lost you slightly in the middle of your question, which makes it a bit difficult. But I think what you said is that we need to make sure we respond to this pandemic in a positive way and get the most out of it that we can. And that's completely right. Condolences for the trauma to everybody that during the period. That'll always be there as part of our collective memory. And when you have such dislocation in terms of livelihood and even life, sadly, in some cases, we need to get the most out of it. And there's all sorts of things we need to review. How we deal with the virus in the future is very important. How we deal with the economy in light of the virus is very important. How we deal with some new social policies, planning policies in the light of it is important. It even goes as far as the criminal justice system, because a particular approach has been taken to prison sentences and fines, and I can pledge that that's one of the things that will be under review. There will be issues that will arise from the fact that 20 out of the 24 sad deaths were in Abbotswood, which will affect the way that we regulate health and care, I'm sure. So at the right time, we will need to revisit that. So I think that's in answer to Stephen's question. I completely agree with him. We need to draw out the positives from all of this, despite the tragedies for so many.
Okay, here's a question from Andrew that said, recalling Lord Lisvain's report, will Mr. Thomas accept a non-ministerial position in government if offered between now and the next election, or remain a backbencher?
I can't imagine myself being offered a non-ministerial position, but my main concern is the national interest and working with colleagues in Timberwolves to secure the best for all of the people I represent. So I have to answer that when any specific offer comes, but I imagine I'm in the same position as Chris Robertshaw was, and I'll be a backbencher working with people like Chris Robertshaw. Mrs. Costain, I heard, said some very kind, thoughtful things. Many other backbenchers have done, and look forward to securing what is actually the national interest, moving on from this and to talking no more about my sacking, unfair sacking beyond this weekend.
Okay, Alison, you're live with Chris Thomas, MHK.
Hello, Chris. It's Alison from Moran Commissioners.
Hello, Alison.
I would just like to reiterate about the planning. I feel that planning appeals should not be held by written submission. I know in the past we've been, or developers have asked for written submission appeals, and we've always requested them to be face-to-face. I think it's vitally important. They're very some plans can be very controversial, and you can't get the emotive side over in writing.
Thank you very much for that, Alison, and I completely... that's what I want to hear. When Jane Paul Wilson said that, as a legally qualified person, that she had significant disquiet with what was being proposed, she remained concerned, having heard what the minister said in moving. She talked about the right to fair and public hearing and abuse of Article 6 of the Human Rights Act. She talked about how use of the emergency powers was not justifiable, even if it was expedient in the short term, because it was increasing the risk to legal challenge and it was storing up ongoing problems for the future. I think we're both right. I think basically the order was disastrous potentially, and it was right to be thrown out, and I'm very grateful for Tim Ward members seeing that over the course of the weekend, even though they only got information from me.
I totally agree with you, and also God forbid that this COVID situation continues, but hypothetically, let's say it did, there would be no harm at all in holding planning appeals virtually.
Exactly, that's the point. Go on, carry on.
At the moment, local authorities and committees that members sit on, we're holding our meetings virtually, very successfully. So there's no reason, if need be, that couldn't be the same for planning.
Completely agree. And we're making law in a virtual environment successfully. So why can't we implement law through planning process and so on? So that was a disastrous argument that was made by both the ministers concerned and the chief minister subsequently. I was shocked to hear him repeating that argument this morning on Manx Radio. The other point is the information that was kept from members, which I knew all throughout the last 6 weeks, is that the people who were in this situation have been written to, and pretty much none of them actually wanted to proceed in the way that the minister was about to impose on them. And that's information that's now out, and will need to be followed up later on. I mean, basically everybody agreed with you, Alison.
We're live with Chris Thomas, MHK.
This is the Isle of Man talking, the man in line.
If you have a point to make, text 166177, email studio@maxradio.com, and give us a call.
The
Nation Station,
Max Radio. The Man in Line with Andy Wint, furnished by Magic Carpets.
29 minutes to one. It's a gorgeous Friday afternoon in the Isle of Man. We're with Chris Thomas, MHK, who up until a couple of days ago was the Policy and Reform Minister, till he got fired by the Chief Minister. Roger, you're live with Chris Thomas, MHK.
Thank you. Before the break, Chris mentioned the national interest. Now, I think the Chief Minister has acted against the national interest, because the Council of Ministers is now two ministers light. There's no indication this morning from the Chief Minister's interview on Manx Radio that there is an appointment pending. But I think that this really, in these very, very serious times we're going through and will continue to go through, I think he has weakened the national interest. I just wonder what Chris thought of that.
Thank you for that excellent question, and I hadn't thought of it before, but I think you persuaded me. It's a fair point. The more diverse the opinion, the more expertise being applied to something, as the executive goes about making its mind up, the better the likely way forward that's chosen will be. The other point to make is that more generally during the crisis, a small group inside the Council of Ministers has been more involved than the rest of the Council of Ministers, which I've always found to be slightly unhealthy. So all the work on the programme for government was suspended for 2 months, which basically meant that all of the committees that I normally chair weren't meeting. And one of the dislocations that will happen, and the new Minister for Policy and Reform will have to pick up, is that those meetings were all scheduled for Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday next week, or they were scheduled for... had in the last couple of days, and there's a huge backlog of business that needs to be taken forward. So I think you make a really good point. And having said that, though, Roger, You might also have heard me earlier on say that power in the Isle of Man has shifted very much in the last couple of years towards Tim Ward. Climate change agenda was nowhere near the Council of Ministers' agenda, but it was quite rightly forced onto the Council of Ministers and the Chief Minister's plate by activity in Tim Ward. Many, many more issues are like that, and I do think now we've got a great opportunity to have a really good September 2021 national election to make real choices about some real challenges that we've got to face. And so I do hope that the next, what would it be, 15 months in the House of Keys and Legislative Council and Tim Ward will be very lively from developing Manx public policy. And I invite the public to participate in the deliberations as much as they can.
I just want to also say that I thought there was a misleading about your position, whether you had a declared position. In fact, I took the trouble to pick up on the internet your 2016 manifesto, and it's quite right what you say. You do make an issue about planning, and there is a whole page, as you say, referring to the planning issue. So I can't see how the interpretation of your position was misinterpreted by the Chief Minister. You have my great sympathy, and I think we've lost a major politician from government, and I do regret that.
Okay, Roger, thanks for calling us today. A note in as well, by the way. There are some for, some against you, Chris Thomas. Here's one. John, it just said, it seems Chris wanted to enjoy the salary of a minister while retaining the voting freedom of a backbencher. He now claims to have disagreed with most of Comyn's decisions in recent months. Resignation at an earlier date would have been more honourable. This is John. So the question is, Chris Thomas, are you a team player?
No, it's a very, very good question. And it's one that I ask myself, and I believe I am, and I try my best. I do think that's a very, very valuable point of view. But what's happened in the Council of Ministers recently is there's a reduction in the involvement of two or three of the members over the last three or four years. And as the power, quite rightly, because it's moved more towards the House of Keys itself, because some of the innovative thinkers and the imaginative thinkers and, dare I say it, the brains behind the future of the Isle of Man are actually in the Keys rather than in the Council of Ministers, and I'm looking forward to working with them. Teamwork is absolutely valuable. I'm disappointed that John thinks that remuneration came into it. I have suffered a substantial salary loss. I like Chris Robertshaw, a few years ago, I didn't go straight into a departmental membership position for about 40 months when I first started representing Douglas West. I wasn't a member of any department, which again was a salary loss. You will find, the Manx public will find, that pretty much most of the politicians are actually focused on public policy and making the right interests for the people they the right decisions for the people they represent, and remuneration is used against them. And it works in certain cases, but you will find, especially in this current Keys and Legislative Council, that people are saying, no, look, remuneration is not what this is about. I came here to represent the public interest and the national interest.
OK, Peter, you're live with Chris Thomas.
Oh, hello, Mr. Thomas. It's Peter Murcott here. You will know this. I'm one of your constituents. I'd first of all just like to put on record that I am really sorry to see you no longer in that key role. I think you were a great asset to the government, and I think the government will be poorer without your contribution. I would also like to put on record that the way in which you've always responded, even though extremely busy on so many other matters, to things that I personally brought to you, and I will assume that you have been just the same with other constituents, and I think that needs to go on the public record as well. One thing that you touched on listening to it here, you touched about criminal law policy and something with regard to the way it was used during the crisis. I think it probably opens up a much wider debate that I've been trying to get going, as you know, with talking to yourself, and mm-hmm. that is for the government to have a far clearer policy of when and when not prison will be used. And if you recall, I made some observations about the forthcoming education bill, which from my researches had radically increased the number of possibilities of prison being used for offences which really never should be regarded as imprisonable. I think it had gone up from 2, maybe 1 or at the most 2 under the present law to 9. And I would be interested in your comments about the way in which prison was used during this current crisis, in the sense that I form the impression, without being able to have all the fine detail, that the courts didn't have too much alternative. And this, to me, seems to be a cardinal mistake, and that the government does need to have a far clearer policy of when prison is appropriate, or the steps that should be taken before you actually start sending people to prison.
I completely agree with the big picture. We'll be discussing the detail, I'm sure, in coming weeks and months, especially now on the backbencher, so I can we can talk more openly. And I think you've nailed a very important point about the emergency. We came into the emergency with only criminal penalties, either prison or a fine. We didn't have the administrative fines that were introduced later, and that affected the way things worked, and that needs to be reviewed at the right time later on. It was very important to encourage people to do the right thing, and perhaps we didn't do that in the right way, and perhaps we didn't use criminal justice system in the right way, and perhaps we didn't bring in early enough administrative fines around this, and perhaps we didn't rely on trusting people with providing guidelines early enough. And so those are all sorts of things that we'll need to review as we come out of the crisis. And I also look forward to talking with you, Mr. Murcott, about the education bill and the point more generally. Thanks for phoning in, and I appreciate appreciation.
That's great. Thank you, Peter. Thanks for calling us today on The Man in Line. We're with Chris Thomas, MHK, who lost his job as the Policy and Reform Minister after voting against Comyn. Well, I suppose, and again, this is going to be argued in the future. Did you put the Chief Minister in an invidious position, Chris Thomas?
It wasn't comfortable for him, the meeting we had at the end of the day after the sitting. And there's many great characteristics about the Chief Minister. He's a lovely person. He cares about the people. He cares about the Isle of Man. And he regards it as being, I put him in a position. I don't see it like that. I see it as he had two choices. Number one, he could say that, and he could believe that I had a pre-declared position and nothing would have happened. This would have all gone away and we could have carried on in the national interest with me as a member of the government. Or he could regard it as being I'd embarrassed him in front of the 8 people who knew that I'd been raising this issue for months in the council of ministers, and he took that second route and I wouldn't have taken that route in his situation. And the phrase that everybody associates with the Chief Minister in respect of how policy develops is you've got to follow the ripples. Everybody who's worked with him politically will know that's a phrase he uses over and over again. And I genuinely believe the Chief Minister hadn't followed the ripples on this occasion. I regret that. I think he regrets that. And I still respect him as a person. He's a lovely human being. He genuinely cares passionately about the Isle of Man. He believes passionately that everything he does is in the national interest. Most politicians are like that. They're passionate about public policy and making things better for people. That's why we stand for election. That's why we get elected. And I regret what's happened. I think he probably does already.
With Chris Thomas, MHK, on The Man in Line. Anything you want to say, you can text, you can email, you can call. The Nation Station. It's 12:45 on Max Radio with Chris Thomas, MHK, formerly the Minister of Policy and Reform, and the Queen of Manx Pilates, Mo Schering, is with us. Hello, Mo.
Oh, that's a good introduction, isn't it? Sorry, I just had to laugh. I didn't realise I was getting my full title. I just wanted to say to Mr. Thomas, I'm not at all surprised he got the sack. I mean, let's face it. A politician that answers every question that he's asked and answers a question as if he knows what he's talking about. I mean, you just don't have a politician like that, do you? So I'm not really surprised that you've lost your job, Mr. Thomas, but I'm really, really sorry you have, because I think it will be very, very, you'll be missed a lot by the government.
So thank you so much for phoning, and I just wanted to say I don't think we've met really. I know of you, of course, and I was asked earlier on about what one of the outcomes from this crisis could be for people, and I think it's about getting balances right. I'm sure that my mental health and physical health has improved during this period, as I've really focused on what's important. And David Cretney left the Manx politics a few months ago, and he said to me, Chris, you've got to start focusing on what really matters to the Manx public, and you've got to simplify messages. And I think this whole process has helped me at home, and it's also helped me politically in that sense, because you've got to have definite objectives. So I really thank you for that call and those observations.
Well, actually, I've always been interested in planning. When I lived in, I am Manx, I was born here, but when I lived in England, I was on a planning committee, and always it amazes me here the difference that between planning on the island and in England, because I was a district councillor and you had to be an elected member to be a member of the planning committee. So, you know, they, of course, every meeting was open. You know, you had the audience behind you all the time, shouting instructions most of the time. And, I can never quite come to grips with the fact that people are just picked up from the out of the blue and sit on the planning committee here. But that's just my comment on it. But I really wanted to comment to you and say I am so sorry you lost your job, and you will be a terrible loss, I think, to the government.
Thank you very much.
OK, well, Chris Thomas, next year, next September, there's a Keys election. Will you be standing in Douglas Central?
I will, and look forward to knocking on your door in that context. But you ought to declare an interest that you are a constituent at that point as well, having asked me that question. It's great to have Manx Radio as a public service. Well, I'm sure we won't talk on the doorstep. You'll say I can't talk to you because I'm working for the leading public affairs programme on a national broadcast.
Well, obviously, I'm, as I say, you and Anne Corlett are my MHKs, and it's interesting that even now, I mean, a lot of people are talking as though your career is over. People come back in politics. Do you look forward to making a frontline contribution to Manx politics in the future?
From June Tynwald. I'm even taking a bill on Tuesday, and I keep saying it, the power in Tynwald at the moment is with the members. There was a shift of 50% of the members in the House of Keys at the last election. We will have a lot of challenges because of the from outsiders coming into the House of Keys because of the challenges we've got in the island at the moment, which need to be dealt with. There'll be differences of opinion about how we've done, and the next 15 months is going to be crucial in framing the questions that need to be answered by the September 2021 general election. I'm looking forward to being involved with it personally, and I really hope that Manx Radio will do everything it can to encourage that public policy debate. We've got challenges, we've got to face up to them.
Well, there are all sorts of things that are... In fact, this morning we had a brief meeting about coverage of the election next year. And the point that now there will be 15-year-olds, people who are 15 years of age, who will be able to vote in next year's election, obviously, because it's September of next year. And planning for that election's already started. I just want to drag you back, by the way, to this planning thing, because somebody's... we've got lots and lots of messages, which I'm going to come to in a moment, but I want... You see, in the middle of this pandemic, Chris Thomas, everybody's worried about finances, everybody's worried about health, people are really concerned about their families and everything. Now, to talk, to make a stand on principle for something as what some people may consider nebulous, the concept of planning. It doesn't hurt you until it hurts you, planning. So just tell us, run that by us again, why you think it was so important that you voted against.
Because inside the emergency, we should be only focusing on dealing with things that we need to focus on in an emergency. The planning system is in the process of reform, as across virtual planning meetings and virtual planning appeals are becoming normal. They've accelerated the development. That's increasing participation in the planning process. It's increasing transparency. It was just wrong to do it in this way. I'm fully up for reforming the planning. I 100% accept that there are more important things that we should be dealing with, but that was a mistake that government was making. They were using the emergency powers to deal with something that they didn't need to deal with. In fact, it was wrong to deal with it. As was explained so clearly, it was practically unlawful. It was certainly unjustified. I mean, it's lawful, they could do it, but it was the wrong thing to do, and it might not stand up to legal challenge, and planning is a sort of area where there is legal challenge.
And some people have messages have come in, and they found it difficult to reconcile how, obviously they're outside politics, how do you maintain a cordial relationship with somebody who's fired you?
I think that's the way I see politics, and some people say it's a weakness of mine, but the way I see politics is it's about doing the best thing for everybody. And that means drawing out the strengths in everybody, trying to understand their position and why they believe so passionately, and trying to work out a consensus to take things forward that actually works for everybody. A lot of politicians represent this interest or that interest. They're for business, or they're for trade unions, or they're for poor people, or they're for rich people. And they see things from that through a narrow problem. I've always tried to actually try and get to the heart of the issue and understand everybody's perspective. And so therefore, everybody's got strength, and you've got something worthwhile to contribute to a debate. And I think the literal meaning of politics is actually to draw out consensus and work out what's best for everybody and get them to accept that even if it's not directly in their interest, it's actually good for everybody and they are part of society and a community. So apologies if it upset people that I said that Howard, the Chief Minister, is a good person and so on, but that is actually how I feel, and I do feel sorry for him.
Just some notes in about you then. The Chris Thomas fan club has been out in force. What a terrible loss to government, Mr. Thomas is. I very much doubt there's anyone in government capable and has the same intelligence to be able to do the job efficiently as Mr. Thomas. It's a sad week for Manx politics. Another one said, didn't Mr. Thomas stand up for what he believed in? Isn't what politicians do? Be honest and serve their constituents to the best of their ability. That was Graham who said that as well. Lots of people thanking you for their support on constituency issues as well. Amy said, full support to Chris Thomas. Poor decision by the Chief Minister. You don't throw out your strongest player out of the team. Good luck, Chris, that is. Well, Chris Thomas, it's been a heck of a week. What are you going to be doing the weekend to get this out of your head?
I've got a couple of other things to tidy up this bit, but we will. It's looking like going to be a good weekend family-wise. The great news is that we've beaten this virus, at least in the first stage. We've got challenges we need to face up to, but part of those are at home as well. So I actually did go to some friends for a barbecue and a beer yesterday evening. I didn't have too many beers because I knew I had this responsibility to come on live with you for an hour, Andy, but they said to me that I looked relieved and more balanced as a human being than I had done the last time they met me. So I'm looking forward to this weekend.
Well, it's an ill wind that blows nobody any good. Thanks for being with us today, Chris. Good to talk to you.
Thank you for the invitation and to all the Manx public for joining in. I hope it was a participatory show that we need to have on the Manx National Public Service broadcaster.
All right. Thanks for being with us today. It's 7:07. Yes, it fairly well lit up the switchboard here today. And I'll just leave you finally with what Kate Costain had to say, the former health minister. Kate Costain, the Liberal Vanin leader, had to say about Mr. Thomas's dismissal.
I was quite astonished. I mean, it really is quite hard to believe that somebody who works as hard as Chris does, and to be honest, he's ultra intelligent. He's got sort of more intelligence than I think the rest of us put together. It would seem to me that only an idiot would sack his most intelligent minister in the middle of a global pandemic. It's just crazy.
That's quite strong wording there. Do you not think it was a justifiable decision? A key member of Howard Quayle's top team who appears to be consistently challenging the government's position in a public domain.
Well, I don't know what you mean about consistently challenging. I mean, as far as I'm aware, he got sacked because of something that he did in March, which I'm sure had it been so bad, he would have got sacked in March. And that sort of the latest time that he voted against government was over a planning matter. Tyndall didn't even support that. It was voted down. His vote would have made no difference. So it can hardly be classed as a matter of national importance when Tyndall didn't consider it to be so.
Do you think then that there may be something that's gone on behind the scenes which we're maybe not aware of at the moment?
Well, that's always a possibility, isn't it? But I think the whole thing just demonstrates really what I've always said all along, that the Council of Ministers is a political party that's formed after the election. And it's just completely undemocratic. I think they're going to struggle without them. I think it was a very foolish decision, and I think it's one that will be regretted.
Kate Costain from Liberal Vanin talking about the dismissal of Chris Thomas, MHK. Any more you need to say, you can call 682-631. You can email maninline@manxradio.com. And, of course, Man in Line is available as a podcast, with all the usual podcast providers doing their stuff. Thanks to studio producer today, Howard Kane. Stick around, late lunch is on the way. Christy De Haven, we've got Alex back in the afternoon, update of 5:30. Greatest Hits with Chris Pearson at 6, and Sweet and Swing with Howard the Jazz Man at 9, and late show tonight with Big Stew through till 1 in the morning. It's going to be a lovely weekend. Make the most of it. Stay home, stay safe.